Good afternoon, Lynn Sorensen.
Well, good afternoon, Phil.
How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Yeah. Out in your garden? Have you been out in your garden today?
Oh, yes. From very early on.
Well, tell me what it is. Is your garden a vegetable garden, a flower garden, a bit of both garden?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, tell me a little bit more. What would I find if I went to see your garden? Lynn, are you with me?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, well, I can now, but I didn't for a moment there. Well, why don't we get to the subject, since I wanted to talk about your garden, but then you went silent.
Okay.
First, there you go. First, a look at the county website again, Jefferson County Public Health website I'm talking about. And what I see is the same number of positive cases that I have seen for, what is it, 4 weeks, 5 weeks?
4 weeks.
And what do you think that tells us, other than the obvious, we're not having a lot of positive cases reported?
Well, there's almost 1,000 tests that are done, and I think it's reflective of the communities sticking to the masks and the hand washing and the social distancing.
And it really proves that these measures that we have been encouraged to employ truly do work, and that the people who ask them, who recommend them to us, truly do know what they're talking about.
That's right.
Yes. So did you listen? I'm sure you did listen to the meeting last night, the Board of County Commissioners, City Council. That's about half of the people who are online, on the telephone online. Did you listen to, well, you did listen. What did you make of what direction do you think we're headed?
I think we're headed forward cautiously.
Lynn, we're having you on speakerphone?
I am, but I'm going to try it without.
Yeah, I think you're going to have to, because the feedback is.
Is that any better?
Well, it's different. Say some more to me. Tell me about the meeting last night.
Well, the meeting, I listened to it for 2 hours, and that was about as much as I could take. I don't know what the outcome was, so I'm going to have to find out myself. Do you have any information about the final outcome? Because this really was just an informational meeting and the start of a discussion. So,
and I don't think one would expect a decision to be made, as you said.
Oh, no.
There was no decision. So, no, there's really, other than getting a sense of what our elected officials and some not elected officials like Dr. Tom Locke are thinking, one certainly got an idea from listening, and actually one got a really good idea of what one county commissioner was thinking, Greg Brotherton, op-ed piece in The Leader this week. And I think wisely stated.
Good piece.
Mm-hmm, good man, Greg Brotherton. And, you know, when I heard, when the commissioners heard it, because they didn't have any warning about this, lucky us, we are on the preferred list, or whatever you call it. The first thing I thought about was, man, that Hood Canal Bridge is going to sink from all the traffic. But I think that our elected officials, well, obviously, it's pretty clear concern, and they all have it, and they all share it. And I think that they will take the wise moves, slow moves, as you said.
Yeah, and so last night was a time for them all to meet, and then I know that they are going to have some kind of public forum. How it's going to take place without people's bodies actually being in a room, I'm not sure, but they certainly are going to be taking public input. And I think there's just a lot of pieces, especially for business owners, to open up and to have it done right and to monitor. I mean, I think it's just an awful lot to ask, and they may not be ready for that. We also have the concern of people coming from other counties because we're such a desirable destination. And, you know, that means that there could be more infection coming to our county. So I don't think it's an us against them sort of thing, but it's what Tom Locke was saying was we're a low prevalence county, and we have people coming from a high prevalence county, namely along the I-5 corridor. And that's what we have to be prepared for in some ways. We can't very well keep them out, you know, be at the county line in the middle of the Hood Canal Bridge and say, are you a resident or not? So there's not going to be any policing, but there's going to be more people coming should we open up really in any form or fashion. So,
to the extent that people are listening to the governor with regard to non-essential travel, at least for the next month or so, we should not be seeing. I'm not saying we won't see. I think we will. But we should not see a great number of folks coming to visit. And the fact that we will not likely have, for a few weeks at least, bars and restaurants open, means that if they want to come here, they're going to have to figure out how to pack their cooler, because the food will be grocery store food only. So probably for the next month, what I'm wondering is if it's 3 weeks, nominally 3 weeks, between transitions between to different stages, right?
Yeah.
And it's going to take us in Jefferson County, 3 weeks or close to it, just to figure out how to qualify. So we're not going to see a great deal of change very quickly, which is certainly a good thing. And again, I actually, despite what Ronald Reagan would want me to say, I have a good bit of confidence in our various branches of government here in the county.
Okay, well, that sort of dates you, you know, that Ronald Reagan talk. But I think one thing that might show us how popular Jefferson County is the number of people that come up to Fort Worden this weekend for the beaches. It's going to be lovely warm weather, and that would be an indication of people just coming because the parks are now open. So that might be, you know, something to look at and say, oh, they drove up here and there weren't even restaurants open, or there weren't bars open, or nails salons or hair cutters. So again, it's still in the hands of people that we hope can make the right decision, and we can always step back at the list of things that can be open. We can pick and choose from those. It's not an all or nothing thing. So they may just elect to say open up a hair cutters. You know, it doesn't have to be all the restaurants and bars, etc. So again, it will take a lot of people talking, and you're right, I think it's going to take some time. So,
well, I'm going to be at Fort Flagler at least part of the weekend, but I am going to be socially distant, probably, I can't guess, but depending upon the tide, between 100 and 200 feet offshore. But I'll be watching, and I'll give you a report in 2 weeks of what Fort Flagler looked like on the first day.
I think we'll get that report.
I think we'll get it. Otherwise, you don't even need me for that.
I think we'll get it in the leader. We'll get it in the leader, and maybe people will comment that they have to wait longer at four-way stops or something like that.
So. I'll text you tomorrow, and then at least you will know. News, I think important news, Jefferson Healthcare now can do antigen tests in-house. And I could tell you why I think that's important, but I'm going to let you do that instead.
Well, it's again, antigen is, they're testing for the coronavirus, and it's one where they do the nasal swab. And that's what we've been collecting here and sending out of the county. And there have been a number of times where it's taken a very long time to get the results back, but it's been speeded up. Definitely by being able to send to the University of Washington, et cetera. But if we can get it in-house, so to speak, here at the hospital, they were saying that they could turn it around in a matter of hours if they needed to, but within a 24-hour period. And this would be for patients that maybe are, you know, just come in through the ER and they want to know right away, is this person, you know, are they actively infected with the coronavirus? Or say they do have some elective surgeries or needed surgeries, and they could test a person, you know, as a preoperative. So there are many advantages. They haven't done, I mean, I think they've been practicing doing it. And imagine it takes some special testing equipment. But the fact that we can have it done right here, I think, is very important. And I think it was Mike Glenn that said that they could probably handle up to 50 tests a day once they get rolling. So That would be good.
It makes it safer for people who work there, be they people who provide medical service or just people who do all the other kinds of work that people do in the hospital, and make it safer for people to come to the hospital. If Steve Evans interviewed Mike Glenn a few weeks ago now, talking about, among other things, how the epidemic, you would think, okay, so many people are sick, it must be boom time for hospitals. Well, it isn't a boom time for hospitals, because all the other things that they normally would do, they cannot.
Yeah, and people are also afraid to go to a hospital. I've heard that and read about it in the news, too, for fear they're going to get something. Well, they may already have something, and they probably should have gone, and had it evaluated. But, but you're right. There's a lot of things that aren't being done now, and some hospitals, small ones, are having to close because of it. So that's a big resource to lose, especially in a small community. Another thing that they're looking for, as far as other testing, and this is antibody testing, they hope to, this is for someone that would show that they actually had the disease already, and they have antibodies developed from that, and they can possibly then be immune to the coronavirus. And so if hospital workers were tested for antibodies and it shows that they had them, they had the disease, then they can be considered safe to take care of special populations within the hospital. But the thing is, they don't know if these antibodies actually do confer immunity, or if it does have an immunity, how long does it last? And there also can be false positives on this. So you could get a test that indicates, oh, yeah, you've had the disease, you must have some immunity, when in fact it's not the case. I was reading this morning about some of the research, and they were saying it takes at least 14 days before you'd want to test for antibodies when you're actually free of symptoms from the coronavirus. But an email I got from the UW was indicating that they're not starting to check until 25 days after infection. And they can do a quicker test that doesn't show actual antibodies, but it shows that there are genetic fragments in the blood that would suggest that an active or waning infection to the coronavirus. So that's called a PCR test, but in any case, it's a whole body of work that's very exciting for researchers to look into. The PCR tests would show the genetic fragments. They can show, they can be in the blood up to 6 months after your illness. This is with, they've had found that evidence from like Ebola and Zika, which are, Zika being another coronavirus. So those pieces persist in the blood, but that isn't indicating that you have antibodies to the actual virus. So it's a whole world of, like I said, information that's being sought right now, and it's kind of confusing, antibodies, antigens, etc. But molecular biology and biochemistry, and let's just give that to the people that really know about it and can maybe help us out here.
So, Lynn, I have to say that I'm becoming sufficiently familiar with you that my introduction of you was terrible. I should have introduced you as Lynn Sorensen, RN, BSN, retired, with a long career in public health and nursing. I just was so excited to talk to you, I forgot to mention all of that. And I can tell that you weren't too offended either, no. And you yourself wanted to be tested, may still want to be tested. This would be, again, the antibody test, because you suspect that you had COVID-19. What will bring you to the decision of actually taking that test, if anything will?
Availability and the fact that it's commercially available, and that my insurance will cover it. Those are some things. And so when I go in to see my doc, in the summer. I'll just see if that's available, and then I would get that test if it is.
My sense in reading, one of the emails you sent from the University of Washington, you forwarded one to me, was, maybe I was misreading it, but it sounded to me like the prime value as far as the UW medicine was concerned is gathering statistics, gathering information, more so than giving the patient reliable information that might influence the patient's behavior.
Well, there's a lot of companies and labs that are asking for people to donate their blood, and indeed this is a very important part of it because they have to have large samples to study, and that's for people that had the disease and those that haven't or didn't think they had it. And, I mean, I know there's a lot of data to be collected, and I'm not going to fault the UW for wanting that. I mean, they've come up with, they've been running so many of the tests, et cetera, and they're on the edge of, you know, cutting-edge research as well. So more power to them. But it does come round to helping us all in the long run. I sent you that article about them using a llama.
Indeed,
yes. A llama called Winter, and this is in Belgium. Apparently this llama has a special class of antibodies. They're calling them nanobodies. It's kind of a niche kind that shows some early promise that these antibodies latch onto those spiky things on the coronavirus. You've all seen the image of this brown thing with these kind of dreadful looking spikes sticking out of them. But anyway, this nanobody can actually neutralize the coronavirus so that they can't get into the cell to replicate, because the virus is nothing unless it gets into a cell so it can make more of its own and, you know, destroy the cell and the body and as well. But so this research, again, is just showing some promise, and they were saying that they could act as if there was something that could at least stop the disease in its track, that would be acting as sort of a bridge until an actual vaccine could be developed. So there are all kinds of things coming out of this, and one would hope that when a certain laboratory finds something spectacular and that will work, that it'll be shared with the world, not kept, you know, hostage essentially to the highest bidder. So there is that risk with laboratories and pharmaceutical companies that want to make, you know, most money they can off of that, because research is very expensive. But I won't go into the politics of all that. I think it's hopeful that there are things being worked on, and lots of people are putting their time and energies into this.
When I get to buy you that beer at the poorhouse, we're going to have, I think, a very engaging political conversation that we touch on here but don't ever quite get into. But this is a little political, my next question, and that is, there's clearly a divide. I see it as I go about, depending upon where I go. I go to one store. Well, I'll just even say I go to Cenex to get a bale of straw and some fish fertilizer for my garden. Okay. Nobody's wearing a mask. They do have plexiglass. No one's wearing a mask. Nobody's wearing a mask who comes in except me. Nobody behind the counter. I go to Olympic equipment rentals. They have there's no way you would know from walking into that store that there's any epidemic going on anywhere. Then on the other hand, you walk across the street to Hadlock Building Supply, there's plexiglass, there's masks. There's a cultural divide about this matter of masks. I could comment on that, but I'd like you to instead.
Well, I agree that you will find variability in that, and it may be politics. It may be just the fact of not understanding that this coronavirus could be anywhere. And so if you're protected, that's good. But the people that aren't, you know, they may come down with the disease. I can't say that they will. But Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand people that are not following the orders, except that they maybe just think they're somehow special and won't get it.
Special in some way or other.
If you don't believe in it. If you don't believe it, it won't happen.
Wear a mask. I don't like wearing a mask. I don't like wearing a dust mask in my wood shop. And I never liked wearing a respirator at work when people were using polyester resins around me. But, you know, we do it anyway. Nevertheless, I see people not wearing masks. I also see people with a mask on when they're by themselves in their cars. I see people actually wearing a mask riding their bicycle on the Larry Scott Trail, which I truly cannot wear a mask and bicycle at the same time. I need the oxygen that the mask will not let through. What am I getting at? Your common sense recommendations for when to wear a mask and when not to wear a mask.
As directed, you wear a mask when you're going out in public, when you're not going to be socially distanced. I mean, you can do that. You should do that as well. But I think it's actually a reassurance for other people that you are, you know, taking it seriously. And I just think it's a matter of consciousness and following the directives. And I'm all for personal freedoms, but this is a little bit more than that. I'm not saying we're giving up our rights. We just that this helps us all stay healthier, which I think the number of positives we've had is reflective of that. But I would like to bring up one more thing before I go
to toes. I forgot the toes.
Toes, COVID toes. Mm-hmm. This is something I just came across this morning. I think it was in the Washington Post, about a possible new symptom from the coronavirus. And this is where toes become red, swollen, feel burning and itching. And it's something that's called chilblains, which is like a pseudo frostbite. So you usually can get this in your super cold and then wet. And it's an inflammation process. But apparently this is affecting more children and young adults. And enough podiatrists have seen this that all around the world that they're saying, hey, I think this should be added to the symptoms of being positive for COVID-19. And because it's only showing up in the toes, their thought was, well, maybe it reflects a healthy immune response to a mild or asymptomatic infection. So if you go on the internet, look up COVID toes. You'll see some pretty dramatic swollen red toes. And I think it's just phenomenal how many ways this disease does manifest itself. So just hang on. There'll probably be more.
Well, on a personal level, I do not want to see those symptoms or feel them, and I surely hope you don't either. But yeah, I'm looking. I have up on the computer here in the control room fever, chills, repeated shaking with chills, muscle pain, headache, sore throat, loss of taste or smell. COVID toes is not on this list, but now it is. So many, many opportunities for many negative tests, actually, because those symptoms are pretty familiar, really, with a lot of other, or at least several other ailments that people get. Nevertheless, get tested if you're suspicious and wear your masks and don't get too close to Lynn Sorensen or to Phil Andrusen. Lynn Sorensen, RNBSN, it's always a pleasure to talk with you on the air. We'll be back with you again in 2 weeks.
Okay, Phil.
Take good care, okay?
Have a good afternoon. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.